Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am a Jito Ryo master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
Right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your Prom-Tom host, Thomas Prom-Tom Mattis. And on this episode, we're in our second week of Tsunami Month, where everything I review has been on Tsunami. And I figured since, you know, it's summer movie season, and San Diego Comic-Con is this week, along with the fact that in a week and a half, Dark Knight Rises, which is the third movie in the Chris Nolan Batman trilogy, is coming out. What a better time than any than to review the first volume of Batman the Animated Series, which is the first 28 episodes of the series. And let me tell you something, watching this series has just put me in a Batman state of mind. I actually didn't get to watch this when it first came out. This is one of those instances where, again, it's something that either came out before my time, or it came out during time I was young, but due to the circumstances of not having cable and stuff like that, I wasn't able to watch it. Or I guess in this case, I was so young and I couldn't stay up in time to watch it when they happened to premiere on Fox. Because again, this is a whole thing to where they premiered on Fox on Sunday nights. So, yeah, this is something to where I finally got to watch the series when it came on Tsunami in 2000. So, yeah, again, another instance of Tsunami helping me see a show, a great show in this case. And I instantly fell in love with the series. There is a reason so many people consider it quite possibly one of the greatest animated shows of all time. And I'm one of those people for that matter. And, you know, I've even taken further about talking about how this is anime, and yes, I'm telling people right now, because I know there are people who do listen to the show who have an issue with that. If you do, here is fair warning. In the animation segment, I will be talking about this. I'm going to say this, and I'm usually a nice person. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. Everybody's entitled to that. But here's something to where I put my foot down on this. I'm going to be talking about this. It's something I've done a lot of research on, and it's a conclusion that I've come to. And while you're entitled to your opinion, if you don't like this, and I've given you fair warning that I'm going to talk about this, and you don't skip ahead or you listen to, and you complain about me talking about this, I'm sorry, you do not have a right to complain. I've given you fair warning. When you get... I'm going to tell you right now. It's going to be the first thing we talk about when we talk about animation. When we get to it, skip ahead. Okay? Skip ahead or don't listen. But I'm going to be talking about this. If talking about this subject is something you don't like, skip ahead. Okay? I don't want to hear anybody be complaining that I did not give them fair warning because I have given you fair warning. I'm just putting that out there, and I don't mean to be mean about this. But I'm just saying it because I've talked about this before on other podcasts that I've done, and I've gotten back from people, oh, why did you talk about it? I don't like that you talked about that and spent so much time talking about that. You shouldn't have talked about that. So, yeah. I'm just giving people fair warning about that. So with all that being said, we really should get right into our review because I can only imagine with all the stuff I have to talk about, this might be another one of those episodes that maybe heads towards the 2-hour mark. I'm not planning it to be that way, but it always can. You never know with me. I think I talk for 5 minutes and I end up talking for 20. So let's get right into it with cast and synopsis. Let's start with cast. We have Kevin Conroy as Batman/Bruce Wayne, Lauren Lester as Robin/Dick Grayson, Clive Revel and Alfred Zublis Jr. both play Alfred Pennyworth. Clive did the first 3 episodes, and then Ephraim did the rest of the series, for that matter. Bob Hastings as Commissioner James Gordon. Robert Consonzo as Detective Harvey Bullock. Adriana Barbu as Selina Kyle/Catwoman. Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, plays the Joker. Arlene Sorkin is Harley Quinn. Richard Mole is Harvey Dent/Two-Face. Diana Pershings is Poison Ivy. Henry Pollack II is Scarecrow. Ron Perlman, Hellboy and so many other things, Beast in the 1990s Beauty and the Beast series, plays Clayface. Paul Williams, and I'm so sad I don't have Rainbow Connection playing in the background, by the way, voices the Penguin. Roddy McDowall as the Mad Hatter. Michael Arce plays Mr. Freeze. Adam West has a guest spot on an episode as the Grey Ghost. And Mari Devon plays Summer Gleason throughout the series. Synopsis. Batman is a superhero in Gotham City, and we follow his adventures of stopping criminals. That's the synopsis. It really is that simple. It's the continuing adventures of Batman as he goes out every night to stop criminals in the memory of his parents who were slain when he was a kid. It really is just that simple of a synopsis. So, with that being said, let's put on our cape and cowls. Let's get our deep Christian Bale voices. And, swallow those testosterone as our balls are guaranteed to hit the floor. And let's get right into our review of Batman, the animated series.
Thank you.
let's get started with our review. Of course, we have our talking points, music, animation, acting, and story. And of course, in the middle of that, we'll have a break. But let's start off with music. And of course, we're going to start off with the opening, and for that matter, closing theme of Batman the Animated Series. Of course, the closing theme was really sort of a sort of shortened version of that opening theme, which, in all honesty, it's the Danny Elfman Batman theme that was also used in the first Batman movie from 1989, which is just an outstanding theme. Even to this day, I think most people, when they think of the Batman theme, they think of the 1989 Danny Elfman theme. And let's be honest, there have been a lot of good themes for Batman. You know, you have sort of the cheesiness of the 1960s television series, you know, Batman, 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 Batman. And of course, you have the recent, you know, Batman Begins and Dark Knights, you know, Hans Zimmer, dun, dun, dun. Dun, 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 dun. You know, and the use of violins in that. But the Danny Elfman theme throughout all of this has just stand iconic. You know, again, this is going to be another one of those episodes, by the way, where I'm probably quoting Michael Bailey a lot. Because, again, I get my comic book information from Michael Bailey. Which you can find at, you know, his podcast at www.viewsfromthelonebox.com. And yes, I just pimped. It's obligatory. You know, we got out of the way. I won't say it again. But back to the point, you know, he talks about his feelings about how a good superhero theme needs to have a lot of brass. And taking that to what I feel to be true as well. You know, again, you have a great use of brass in this theme. And it's just this iconic theme. It has the perfect sense of sort of darkness and light within the theme itself. Because it is sort of a dark, brooding theme. But just the crescendos within the theme, you know, representing that lightness. And just the brightness of it, of this. It really is the theme of a dark hero that's at his best. And it is such a wonderful theme. I love the trumpets in it. I love the brass section all over the piece. You know, da, 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 da. And of course, in those, the brass is being used perfectly. I love how the strings are really underused for that matter. You know, they really do take a backseat to that brass. And I really like that. It's just, it's an iconic theme, and it was the perfect theme to use for this animated series that, you know, going back to 1992 when this came out, you know, a lot of people probably weren't into watching an animated series in prime time. And this really, I think, helped get people into it. When you see that along with the opening animation, which basically tells you everything you need to know about Batman, you know, you're into this series. You're already into this episode. It has you pumped and excited for watching this new episode of Batman. So I really, really liked it for that matter. And for my taste, there really isn't any other Batman theme other than the Danny Elfman Batman theme. So I really love it for that. And then you have the rest of the score throughout the series, which is great because every episode had different music. I mean, there were repeating themes and stuff. You know, you had Bruce Wayne's theme and sort of Batman's theme and stuff and that stuff. But again, every episode was different. I mean, Joker had several different themes. Because the themes themselves, there was an underlying sort of way, like the Joker theme would go, which was very playful. And you, da-da, da-da, da-da. You know, that, if you would listen to it like, oh yeah, this is a Joker theme. But at the same time, they were always different in connection with the episode. You know, for instance, in the episode that was entitled, let me look it up real quick, because I do have to list the episodes. Last Laugh, which was a whole April Fool's Day Joker episode, you know, the da 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 da. Yo, which was the Joker theme for that episode. Just brilliant, and it really fit this whole laughing April Fool's Day theme that they were going for. And, you know, all the themes for all the villains were just wonderful. I loved listening to the music. That was one of the great things in watching this series for this review, was listening for the music and listening to all the wonderful little, you know, songs and music and themes and sound clues and musical clues. You know, it was wonderful to listen, and just how the music blended together spectacularly. And again, it's another instance of a series where the music really is blended with the animation, blended with the story, it enhances the story, and really leads to this wonderful, wonderfully watched series. And with that, let's move on to animation. And of course, point one is the warning I gave you at the beginning of the episode. We're going to talk about the ancestral background of Batman the Animated Series and how it's an American anime. So once again, for all those who do not like me talking about this subject, I'm giving you fair warning. If you don't like me talking about American animation being an anime and are so concerned with me talking about that and firmly believe that, you know, anime can only be Japanese cartoons, if that's your belief, you have every right to that belief. But I'm giving you a fair warning now. Move ahead 10 minutes. You have been warned. Okay? I don't want to hear anybody complain that I didn't give them fair warning. Okay? I'm just putting that warning out there right now. Because I'm putting my foot down. It goes back to a review I did 2 years ago where I had people complaining about superheroes in Japan, which I'm not going to get into. But you've been warned. So, with that being said, we're going to get into this. Now, a lot of people like to think that I consider Batman Animated Series, and a lot of people that consider Batman Animated Series an anime, in my case, an American anime, because, well, it was animated in Japan, so of course it seems like it's an anime. It has nothing to do with the fact that the primary animation work, as in, you know, the keys and all of that stuff, were done in Japan. No, it has to do with the character designs of Bruce Timm, Eric Romanowski, who did the backgrounds, and all of these guys back in America. You know, Alan Burnett, you know, Paul Dini did the stories, but, you know, Alan Burnett, who was producer. Though the main focus here I'm going to be focusing on is Bruce Timm, because he was really the lead designer. I mean, Eric Romanowski did the backgrounds, but as far as the characters and a lot of the other stuff and cars and things like that, it was Bruce Timm. The animators in Japan still have to work off his character designs, you know, his designs in general. So again, what was animated in Japan, it could have been animated in France, in Russia, in America for that matter, and it still would have come out this way. But, you know, looking at Bruce Timm's designs and the overall style that he has for Batman the Animated Series, which, you know, people have called, now that I get my English right, you know, Dark Deco, because it's Art Deco on dark paper, which was brilliant, and we'll get more into that in a little bit. But, you know, right off the bat again, I think everybody knows, influenced by the Fleischer Superman cartoons, which again, those Superman Fleischer cartoons, the action in that was very influential, not just for Batman the Animated Series, but again, for that first generation of anime. And again, that whole sense of a feel of an action scene. As I say a lot, you know, anime is something to where it has a lot more ability to be in a lot more different genres than cartoons. You know, cartoon is kind of, the cartoon style is really, it mostly is comedy, and it can have some dark things, but again, and we'll get more into this when we talk a little bit about the story, which, you know, we're going to get a little bit into the story we have to talk about, you know, it being an anime, but the, you know, again, cartoons really only lend itself to a couple particular genres. Whereas, you know, anime really is broader towards many genres, pretty much all genres, that it has the ability to do. But its primary strength is its ability to portray action, and therefore the action genre, the adventure genre, and stuff like that. And again, that comes from the Fleischer cartoons, but it also comes from those, you know, it comes from Walt Disney's Sleeping Beauty, because again, you watch that dragon fight, which again, the flow of that action, definitely, you can see connections between that and the Fleischer Superman cartoons, or at least similarities, and how those in turn influence the Japanese. But the other aspect of this is, again, Bruce Timm and Eric Romanowski, for that matter, and all the animators who were, you know, because again, you gotta remember Bruce Timm and them, they worked on Tiny Toons before that. They really got their lessons and learned in the early 80s, came about in the mid 80s, and started to get their first jobs in the late 80s and the early 90s. So again, in those early 80s, they were part of that animation group, again, that included people like the people who worked on the Disney movies in the 90s, like Andreas Deja and those people who were coming up. And all of these animators were influenced by the stuff that had been starting to come over from Japan. And I'm talking about Hayao Miyazaki, but I'm also talking about things like Go Lion, which would be turned into Voltron, the animation series that would be turned into Robotech, the, you know, Space Battleship Yamato, Captain Harlock, Battle for the Planet, a.k.a. Gatchaman, you know, all of this stuff, you know, Gundam, you know, where the action, which, again, influenced by those Fleischer cartoons, but also Walt Disney's Sleeping Beauty, but, you know, the way they did action and the way they had characters move, you know, definitely influenced, and you can see it in the animation. Again, the way the characters move and the way the animation itself is interactive with the story is definitely something that came from that second generation of anime. And you see that influence within Bruce Timm's style in the way the animation, again, the ideas of using dark paper, the way they use shadow, which that's not something that comes from the Fleischer cartoons. That's something that comes from, again, things like Battle for the Planet and Go Lion, you know. The Japanese, you know, again, especially Hayao Miyazaki, you look at Castle of Kalesoto, you really see that influence, you know, how he used shadow, and you can see that influence animators in America in the way they use shadow, especially in the 90s, believing that shadow can be your friend and that stuff. So there, it's not just that, you know, again, a same similar ancestral background with the Fleischer Superman cartoons being the influence for Batman, the animated series, which was also a huge influence for both the first and second generation. Though, again, like I said before, the second generation, which is really the first generation of modern anime, which really, its real main influence was Walt Disney's Sleeping Beauty, it still had those small little influences from the Fleischer cartoons and that stuff. So, again, you had that similar background of sorts, but it was also a matter of, you can definitely see influences in the style, in the art of Bruce Timm from people like Hayao Miyazaki. And, you know, I'm blanking on other artists' names, but, you know, the people who worked on Space Battleship Yamato and Captain Harlock, and, you know, people who worked on Go Lions. You see those influences. They're very small, and you have to know what you're looking for. But once you do, you can spot them, and it becomes plain to see. Now, of course, the animation itself doesn't just make this an anime. What makes something an anime is, you know, again, it's, you know, if you've heard me talk about my whole theory of animation categorization and, you know, what makes something a cartoon and what makes something an anime, you know, you've heard all of this before. But again, it's animation and it's the story. And one way I've really found easier, because, you know, I'm always trying to find an easier way to explain the differences. Well, a cartoon is something to where the atmosphere, it's not character driven. It's about the atmosphere. You know, the characters in a cartoon are really interchangeable. You know, Looney Tunes does the same cartoon. It's like, well, this one's done with Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd. Well, this one's done with Daffy Duck and Yosemite Sam. You know, this one's done with Speedy Gonzalez and Sylvester. You know, the characters are interchangeable. Another good example of this, Family Guy, American Dad, and Cleveland Show are all basically the same show. They just have different characters. You know, because again, it's about the atmosphere of the show and sort of the jokes of the writers and that stuff. The characters themselves are really interchangeable. That being said, an anime is something that is a whole lot more character-driven. And that is something that Batman the Animated Series is. And you'll hear me talk about this when we get into story. Batman the Animated Series is really a character-driven story. And you add to that animation that really lends itself towards that. This is what makes Batman the Animated Series an American anime. So it's all of these reasons. But again, it really is something for me, a joy to watch Batman the Animated Series and this first volume and to see all of those ancestral clues in there and connecting the dots and like, oh, you can definitely see influences from the Fleischer Superman cartoons and Hayao Miyazaki's Castle of Cagliostro and, space battleship Yamato and Captain Harlock. That was a real joy to see. So with that being said, let's go on to point two, which is talking about the overall style of Batman the Animated Series, which is this Dark Deco / Art Deco design. Again, the rounding of the buildings, sort of the symmetrical shapes of the characters that Bruce Timm does so well. Again, the backgrounds really help make it. The other aspect of this is that it being drawn on dark paper to really, bring out the shadows, which just absolutely added to the styling of this series, was absolutely incredible. The art in this series is wonderful. Bruce Timm draws such beautiful character designs, and those character designs to be taken, and again, the whole being worked on by really some great studios like Spectrum Animation, Donnie Yen Animation, Sunrise, which, Sunrise does, Gundam, Outlaw Star, all that great stuff that we love in the 90s, Studio Juniko, Blue Pencil, Acom, and of course TMS Entertainment, which was formerly Tokyo Movie Shinsha. Again, TMS being, I think, one of the primary animators of that first season. Again, their great work ethic, really using Bruce Timm's designs, along with Eric's backgrounds, again, the wonderful-looking buildings that really help give the feel of Gotham, along with sort of the rounded edges of, really this, again, this look of if the 1930s World Fair continued for a whole much longer time. It was just a beautiful style to use. Again, we'll talk more about backgrounds later. We're going to talk about character designs in a second. But just this very unique, very, again, you can see that influence of the Fleischer Superman cartoons. It's there. It's the biggest influence you see. And there's a direct correlation if you watch the two back to back. Just how much those Fleischer Superman cartoons influenced Bruce Timm's styling of Batman the Animated Series. And just the way he went around designing characters, even redesigning old characters to make them unique and more modern. It was this great thing to where it had this sort of 1930s, 1940s feel to it, and yet it felt modern. And all of this within the art. It was just incredible to look at. Let's move on to character designs, and because there's so many characters, I kind of put them into groups. We're going to start with Bruce Wayne / Batman, and I just think it was the perfect design for Batman. When I think of Batman, I definitely think of Batman the Animated Series. Again, it's one of those funny things, but like the face looked perfect, sort of square look of him. It became more square in the new adventures. I really love the look of the first season when it was on Fox more than I do the more cartoonish look that comes around when they move to the WB, to be quite honest. But I love sort of the squareness of, and sort of broadness of Bruce's character design. And yet at the same time, these two characters who are the same person, and yet Bruce Wayne looks slimmer for some reason and looks, he does look weaker, whereas Batman looks strong and broad, and it's like, and when you look at it, the great way they use the cape. Oh my god, I love the cape. And again, aspects that they took from Year One, the yellow bat symbol on the chest, which again, taking from Year One, the whole aspect of, Batman, he can't protect or armor his head, but he can armor his chest. So he puts a symbol, basically a target on his chest, so people will aim for his chest instead of his head. but you're taking instances to create the Batman uniform from so many aspects of Batman's mythos was a real joy to see. Then you have Robin and Dick Grayson, again, really going with a sort of classic Robin design. It's kind of hard because he was only in two episodes, and, well, one episode is my favorite, but I like watched it like 4 days ago. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head if they did have him at appearance, because I think they still kind of had him had shorts, which I guess I'm okay with, because it is that classic sort of Robin design. But I think they eventually give him pants, which I like much, much better. I like a Robin with pants rather than shorts. But, you know, the Robin, they hit all the colors. It was a great design for Robin. Again, taking influence from the comics of the past to really do a wonderful design for Robin. On to supporting cast. Again, this is, you know, Commissioner Gordon, Harvey Bullock, Mayor, you know, Alfred. Great job, really, with the character designs for the supporting cast. You know, when I think of Commissioner Gordon, I'm thinking of the animated version of Commissioner Gordon. It really is that good. You know, again, everything, just this commissioner who puts his trust in Batman. It just screams Commissioner Gordon for me. Again, Alfred Pennyworth, you know, it's very hard for me to decide which is my favorite Alfred Pennyworth, this or Michael Caine's Alfred Pennyworth. Because Michael Caine's Alfred Pennyworth is so messed up. Sir, I have plans for fortifying the Batcave. Michael Caine's Alfred is such an enabler. But back on point, I love sort of the roundness of Alfred's character design, and just there's a sense of class within his character design that I really much like. And then, of course, Harvey Bullock, this sort of big, sort of bulking sort of detective, that sort of that classic hard-nosed noir look within his character that I very much like. And then, of course, finally, we'll talk about villains and their character designs, which are absolutely incredible. You know, Joker, really, I was, because they do have them, like, different clothing, but again, sort of that aspect of the 1970 Joker with sort of the suit and everything, but just, they got his face perfect. You know, it had the perfect amount of sort of points and everything. It just looked perfect, and it was absolutely incredible. I mean, so many great villain designs here. Poison Ivy looked sexy as hell. You know, again, we really only see Harley Quinn in one episode in this volume, so there's not much to say. But again, that first one, you know, you can definitely see why she did become more popular and get more use. The redesign of Mr. Freeze was absolutely incredible, and it really, just the look of him, of this very cold villain, was very frightening. The whole aspect of that, you know, Two-Face, you know, didn't have acid in his face, but he was basically burned. Which, it's funny to see things, and we'll talk more about this in the story, but it's funny to see things within character designs and how they happen that eventually get used in the Chris Nolan Batman movies. You know, before I came on here, I had made reference of the last episode of this volume and sort of the plot of it. Where, you know, the plot of the last episode is pretty much like the plot of Batman Begins. I actually had a friend, our good friend Donovan, who sent me a link replying to that, talking about how it's actually from a story, I want to say, as I look it up real quick, Batman The Last Arkham, which is an arc of Batman Shadow of the Bat, number 1 through 4. I really actually questioned that, because I looked at it when it came out. It came out June. The first issue came out June, and the fourth one came out September. And this episode came out in November. So they had to be doing this episode by the time that first issue came out. So I do question whether that episode or this issue influenced it, only because, and again, we're getting more into story here. But, again, they had to be working on the animation for that episode for at least 6 months. So, yeah. You can't just do animation like that. I mean, I know people think animation happens just like that, but it doesn't. But yeah, it's very interesting, and we'll talk more about this later on, about sort of the interesting things of, again, how things that are really first done in this animated series that get used later in movies and other anime movies, and more importantly, even comics, a lot of which is stuff that is influenced by Frank Miller's Dark Knight, Dark Knight Returns, and Batman Year One. Moving on to special effects. I love the special effects here. They're great. I mean, you had many explosions and stuff like that. I think the thing I like the most about the special effects is how, again, they're perfectly blended in with the animation. They don't seem like add-on. And they perfectly accentuate the action and whatever's going on within the animation. Especially when you have weather aspects in this animated series, it really helps, you know, things like rain and fog, they do a great job of showing it and how those special effects really help add to the mood for that episode and everything. And then, of course, backgrounds. And again, I was talking about backgrounds earlier, but the buildings, Gotham City itself looks absolutely incredible. This, you know, it's interesting. A lot of time people think of Gotham City, they do think of Batman animated series, and for that matter, the 1980 Batman series. And there's this thing to where, you know, the person who did the backgrounds for the 1989 Batman series, it was this idea of how, you know, Gotham is this city to where there's a lot of sort of, where the city seems to be closing in on you. Like, there's a lot of sort of dark places where the sun is completely blocked out. And you can see that in the way Gotham is sort of made. And there's a lot of dark places. It just seems like it's the perfect city for Batman. And the backgrounds, you know, the roundness of the, you know, the buildings and everything. The buildings look incredible. All of the backgrounds used are absolutely incredible. And I really, really love them. With that, we are going to take a short break. But when we come back, we're going to move into acting and story.
The funeral is over. Jonathan Kent is on the mend.
So, how's Clark's father?
Oh, much, much better.
Lois has returned home.
Lois, over here!
Harry, wife? Since when did you start meeting your staff at the airport? How'd you know I was returning on that flight?
A good editor checks out his hunches, Lois. I got a hot story I want you on straight away. I'm parked over here.
But just as Metropolis has learned to live without the Man of Steel...
I know, there was only one Superman, but Metropolis just hit the jackpot. Because we got four Supermen now, and nobody knows which of them, if any, is the real McCoy.
Four beings of incredible power and intellect have laid claim to the Man of Steel's name.
The last son of Krypton.
I live.
The Man of Steel.
Man of Steel coming through! Nobody move! This is a bust!
The Cyborg.
Yes, I'm Superman. I'm back.
The Boy of Steel.
Put me down!
Listen, pal, don't ever call me Superboy. Capiche?
The reign of the Supermen is upon us, and so from crisis to crisis, a Superman podcast begins its epic coverage of this last act in the epic Death and Return of Superman saga. Every week, Michael Bailey and Jeffrey Taylor, along with the best and the brightest in the podcasting community, will cover this event in all of its forms, from the comics to the novelizations, to the audio drama, and beyond. Superman is back, but is any of them the real Man of Steel? Find out on From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, located at www.supermanhomepage.com and www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be! It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
In June of 1962, a superhero unlike any other made his first appearance in the pages of Amazing Fantasy number 15, the final issue of that series. 6 months later, this character would receive his own title, and from there he would grow in popularity and be adapted into several animated series, a handful of live-action series both in the U.S. and abroad, have countless action figures made in his likeness, dominate the cinema screen, and much, much more. It is fair to say that the Amazing Spider-Man is a pop culture icon and a fictional character that people all over the world identify with and love. This year, Spider-Man is turning 50, and Views from the Long Box, an internet radio series hosted by me, Michael Bailey, is going to celebrate the wall crawler in a series of episodes focusing on various aspects of the character's existence. Together with such podcasting luminaries as Brad Douglas, Andrew Leyland, John Wilson, and Scott Gardner, I'm going to give Spidey the biggest birthday card a comic fan could. He may not be my favorite character, but I like him a great deal, and he deserves the spotlight in this, his 50th year. Views from the Long Box can be found at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. New episodes hit every Friday. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytooth production in association with the DiMonzo Corps of Milan, Italy.
And welcome back. And as we continue our review, we're going to move on to acting. And of course, we have this split into two parts, protagonist and antagonist acting, and my god, the acting in this series. Andreas Romano did a wonderful job as casting. Every actor in this series, even actors of like small one-episode characters, were absolutely incredible and excellent. I mean, Kevin Conroy is Batman. You know, again, for a lot of these characters, when I think about these characters, the voice in my head is not, you know, anything else other than the animated version's character. Like, when I think of the Joker, as awesome as Heath Ledger was, and as awesome as Jack Nicholson was in the way they played the Joker, when I think of the Joker, I think of Mark Hamill. You know? When I think of Batman / Bruce Wayne, I think of Kevin Conroy. When I think of Robin, I think of Lauren Lester. When I think of the Scarecrow, I think of Henry Pollack II. And when I think of Penguin, I think of Paul Williams. You know, and when I think of Catwoman, I think of Andreas Barbeau. I think of those actors because they did such a wonderful job. And again, starting with protagonist, Kevin Conroy, as Batman, had the right amount of gruff. And, you know, it's to where the voice was different from Bruce Wayne, but yeah, you know, when he was Bruce Wayne, you know, you really got this really the sensitivity at the same time as if there was this act being put on, you know, by Bruce. Because, and it's something that, you know, Kevin said in a special features that's actually on the DVD that Bruce Timm and the others, I think, really planned really well that, you know, to an extent, Bruce Wayne is the mask and Batman is the real person, which is so true, I think, about Batman. And that way that they played the character like that, I thought was perfect. And then, of course, all of the other supporting characters, again, just the awesome voice of Commissioner Gordon, Bob Hastings, that really just wily veteran that, you know, knew what he was doing. You know, Alfred Pennyworth, you know, F. Mintz Zarbis Jr., and I'm probably screwing that name up, but really, really captured exactly who Alfred is. You know, Alfred is, you know, as sort of Mike, they do really well in the Chris Nolan films. He really is the father of Bruce Wayne, to an extent. I mean, Bruce Wayne's father was killed, but it was Alfred who raised him. And really, it's sort of that connection, and you really had this great, I'm trying to think of the word, but, you know, connection and, you know, way they work together between Kevin Conroy and Zarbris Jr. So I really love the protagonist acting. They did a wonderful job. And then the villain voice. Oh, my God. The antagonist and the villain voice acting. Whether it is a really easy, simple antagonist like a, you know, a Roland Daggett or Rupert Thorne, that I was trying to think of that name, or like a gangster, to it being one of like these main crazy characters, like the Joker or the Penguin or Catwoman. I mean, what can't be said about Mark Hamill's performance of the Joker? It's become iconic. I mean, whether you're playing the Batman Arkham Asylum video games, watching the animated series, or watching the if you have the Batman 1989 Special Edition DVD. They animated there's a sort of famous scene that was in the script that was taken out where Batman's, like, riding by a horse down the street during, like, a blackout and everything. It actually is supposed to introduce Robin, but they, like, took a lot of it out. But they had that, like, animated with Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill doing the voices, which is awesome. But yeah, Mark Hamill, it become iconic. And it's kind of funny to learn that Tim Curry was initially penned to be the voice of the Joker, and for whatever reason, it didn't work out. And I mean, with all due respect to Tim Curry, and I loved Tim Curry because he's got a wonderful voice as well, but thank God it fell on Mark Hamill. An absolutely just creepy and incredible voice. Again, when I think of the Joker, I think of that voice. Andrea as, you know, Selina Kyle, again, when I think of Catwoman, I think of her voice. Just the sultry sexiness of the voice that I absolutely love. And not to mention the fact that when I think of, a lot of times, Catwoman, I think of her having blonde hair. You know, the funny thing is, Catwoman actually has black hair in the, you know, comics. And so for the longest time, I thought that was a continuity error, because I was so used to the Batman the Animated Series version having blonde hair. Michael, sorry, as Mr. Freeze, such wonderful acting in Heart of Ice, you know, and Henry Paul II as Jonathan Crane, the Scarecrow, that voice, it makes your things curl up your spine. It's so creepy. You know, Richard Mall is Harvey Dent in Two-Face, you know, and again, it goes more into story, but the fact how they set his character up as being sort of a supporting character and then having him change. He did a wonderful job portraying that character. And, of course, Diane Pershing said Poison Ivy, just the sexiness just oozed off Ivy's character. It was wonderful. All of the antagonists, and for that matter, protagonist actors did a wonderful job. And they really helped the story, because, again, these are stories that are really driven by the characters. And with such great acting, you really believe in these characters, which helps you really believe in these stories that are happening. It's just so wonderful. It's like when you watch The Dark Knight, and so many people love Heath Ledger's Joker, and so many people can sit there and say lines, you know, like, "You never start with the head. It makes people all fuzzy." You know, people can, like, recite lines for Batman, and unfortunately now I'm blanking. Go figure. I want to recite lines for Batman the Animated Series, and now I'm blanking on them. Strangely enough, the only one I felt like, you killed Captain Clown! From Mark Hamill from The Last Laugh, which I... Or should I say, now that I think of it, now that I've like, stalled for enough time, one of my favorite episodes, again, I'll be talking about this later, Christmas with the Joker, just the one-liners from Robin about, like, you know, when Batman goes off, like, you know, well, bah humbug to you, too. Or, you know, he could give lessons to Scrooge. Or later on in the episode where, you know, he's hitting the Joker planes with the bat. It's like, you don't call you Batman for nothing. It's like, I love those lines. And it's just, the acting in this was just absolutely incredible and wonderful to listen to. With that, let's move on to story, and first thing to talk about is really how this series is detailing of the Batman mythos. Because again, the plot is really simple. Each episode follows a different adventure of Batman. Sometimes it's Batman and Robins. Of course, later on in the series, it's Batman, Robin, and Batgirl, and then even later, it's Batman, Nightwing, second Tim Drake Robin, and Batgirl. I could probably go on with that. But again, the taking of so much of the Batman mythos and trying to develop this universe around it, which Batman the Animated Series did such a wonderful job of doing. And you really see it in this first 28 episodes. Because again, you have all the stuff from pre-Crisis. By the way, when I say pre-Crisis, for those who don't know, I'm talking Crisis on Infinite Earth, which was a storyline DC in the mid-80s that basically rebooted their entire universe. And then when I talk about that, I'm talking about stuff from the Golden Age, stuff from the Silver Age, stuff from the Bronze Age, which you do see in this series. And of course, post-Crisis, and the stuff that had been recently introduced, which included things like Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns, Batman Year 1, Year 2, Year 3, Lonely Place of Dying, Death in the Family. All these, what would become and had become iconic stories, and all this mythos of Batman that happened in over 50 years of the character existing. I think at that point it had been 50 years. There was so much to pull from, and really, this was the... I said we're going to talk about this here. And I think it is the perfect place. Really, a lot of the stuff that we see in the movies, especially the Chris Nolan movies and now in animated movies, again, you first see it here. You know, for the longest time, it had always been, you know, Two-Face was this person who had acid splashed in the face, and you saw that in the 1990 movie series. But really, here was the first place to where it wasn't so much that he had acid in his face, but he had been caught in an explosion and half his face burned away. You see that in the movie. But you also see that here, you know, with Two-Face. And just the whole gadget-oriented Batman, how he creates gadgets. But also in the fact that he really had taken, I think, a lot from that Silver Age of... He really was this detective. You know, and I think that was the best part of the Batman mythos that I really think Batman Animated Series took from. Was the fact that Batman was a detective. And he is the type of guy who will... He uses the connections as Bruce Wayne to create stuff and everything, but he's also the same guy who will go undercover as some thug or some homeless guy to sneak into a place to, you know, get information on a gang and the late robbery they're going to pull off so he can stop them. And really, that's one of the great things about the series is a lot of the episodes are these really personal stories, and a lot of them involve gangs, which is what Batman would be doing. That's the whole reason for Batman existing, is that, you know, Batman is Bruce Wayne. He is a person who is trying to clean up Gotham City. You know, yes, you have all these crazy villains who start appearing because of him and whatnot, but really, he's there to take down the gangs and the organized crime that has infiltrated and infested his city. That's why he became Batman. He didn't become Batman because, oh, there's this new supervillain, somebody has to stop him. You know, he became it because he wanted to, you know, the memory of his parents, and he wanted to clean up the organized crime of the city. And it's something that we've seen more and more of, the focus on Batman stopping organized crime. You see it in Gotham Knights. You see it in Batman Year One. You really see it in Batman Under the Red Hood. You see it in the Nolan movies and everything like that. So, really, you see a lot of these first here, and again, that come from how Bruce Timm and all the other series creators really looked deep into Batman's mythos and pulled the best stuff to really represent here within the story. And then, of course, when you go to the individual episodes, again, the plots themselves are really simple, but every story in every episode of this series is a character-driven story, especially here in the first volume. Every episode, maybe one or two, I mean, Christmas with the Joker, Batman, well, even Batman in the Basement, but really Christmas with the Joker is really the only one that, but that was mostly because that was mostly a fun episode. But really every episode here in Volume 1, it's a character-driven episode. What makes every episode work so well in my mind, because really every episode of the first volume is really, really good in my mind. But what makes it work so well is the fact that each episode is character-driven. The plots and the stories themselves don't work if you don't believe in these characters. And it's something you find yourself, you get lost in this series. You get lost with these characters. One of the hardest things to do for this review was to turn off Batman the Animated Series and stop watching. Because you get so lost in this series and so lost in these characters. I mean, like I said, I'm in a Batman state of mind. You know, when I got done watching the series for the review, when I had to start thinking about what I wanted to talk about, while I was able to do that, I found myself starting to watch Batman Year One and Under the Red Hood and Dark Knight and anything I had that was also Batman related, because I was in such a Batman state of mind, because I just lost myself to the series. And the reason that happened is because it is such a character-driven series. The stories within each episode are character-driven. I mean, some of my favorite, as I quickly, look my notes trying to find the episode, It's Never Too Late, where this mob boss called Arnold Strongwell eventually comes around and, helps the police try to bring Thorne down by testifying against him. Batman trying to convince him to testify. This character-driven story about stuff that had happened in his past, that really affected Strongwell and, dealing with drugs and everything like that. Just such a character-driven story. It's a beautiful story. Stories like See No Evil that deal, and that's the other thing, is sort of the dark themes each episode deals with. Like in See No Evil, which deals with sort of child abuse and, domestic disputes, and dealings of drugs, like I said, and Never Too Late. The wonderful emotions and stuff that are sort of brought out, again, feeling bad for a lot of these villains, like in Heart of Ice and in Mad Hatter. Again, these dark tones are really driven by the individual characters, because they make you care for these characters. And you really get into the story because you care about the characters. Like I said, Not Too Late. But, Heart of Ice, redoing the origin and having to wear, Mr. Freeze was this person who was really betrayed. And you feel bad for him. You know what he's doing is bad. You don't agree what he's doing, but you feel bad for the character. Same with the Mad Hatter, who is this hopeless romantic who is in love, and how you watch as his love consumes him and drives him insane. Just such character-driven stories. It's wonderful to watch. With that, the best episodes of this volume, I'm just going to go down a list here and I'll talk about the ones, the second episode, Christmas with the Joker, everybody I think loves that. It's, for me, it's just such a fun episode, and it really shows them having fun with the characters, and it's just a fun Christmas-themed episode that I really, really love. Underdwellers, which, again, dealing with, child abuse and, this sewer king who's taken advantage of these children. It's, to me, it's a wonderful episode because it really shows, I think, Batman at the core of how he helps people. POV, which was a brilliant idea of basically this story of the three cops, Renee Montoya, Harvey Bullock, and Officer Wilkes, who was Montoya's new partner. And, their POV of this sort of thing that went wrong, and then eventually how they were, with Batman's help, able to prove that they weren't, on the take or anything. But it just the way, the cinematic feel of that episode and the way the story went down in that episode, I thought was just brilliant. Really, these three episodes here, 6 through 8, which is Underdwellers, POV, and The Forgotten, which homeless people go missing in The Forgotten, and Bruce has to find them, and eventually, by going undercover, which leads him to getting caught and sent to this sort of desert work camp where they're being taken and everything. And it's just like, again, these character-driven stories that, again, from the victims themselves. Really, really great here. I talked about this episode before. It's never too late. I love sort of the story of this, basically this gangster who, he's really at the end. He's done so many bad things and he refuses to believe in stuff being his fault. And, again, it leads to Stormwind's brother, who is now a priest, who's lost his leg, saving him to really save him. And sort of how family can save each other. And there's a lot of great imagery, with Batman on the church in this episode that I absolutely love. Heart of Ice, I think people have talked about that one to death. Just the way it redefined who Mr. Freeze is and made you feel for this character, even though he was doing these horrible things. See No Evil, because I just love really how it deals with sort of domestic disputes. And again, this really personal issue that goes to a simple matter that people, I think, sometimes forget Batman deals with. Beware the Grey Ghost, which is just another one of those fun episodes that is just a joy to watch. And having Adam West, be the Grey Ghost was just absolute genius. And basically having the two Batmans work together. Oh my god, I love watching that episode over and over again. And again, also really going to the story of how quickly fame can go away from you and be able to find redemption. Just some great themes within that episode. Joker's Favor, and I love this episode because I think really the first, Christmas with the Joker was just a fun episode. But The Last Laugh and The Be a Clown each had their own unique takes on the Joker, and both were good. I think Joker's Favor really gave you the first insert into who Joker was, and just really them capturing exactly who the Joker was, which is the Joker is a character to where, as Denny O'Neill puts it, he walks into a room and everybody's quiet because they don't know what he's going to do, and everybody's scared. Again, quoting Michael Bailey here, he's a person who might kill you because he doesn't like your tie, while at the same time, he's also a person who might not kill you because he likes your tie. That's the type of craziness that he is. Appointment in Crime Alley, and just this real personal story that, the connection Bruce has with the place of where his parents were killed. And again, Roland Daggett, the whole, I don't want to say it's a social commentary on how, sort of urban development, but at the same point in time, you do feel bits of that. But again, I don't think that was a problem. I think it was brilliant the way they really underplayed it and yet still had that there. And really showed the connection that, Bruce has with Leslie Thompson, Dr. Leslie Thompson, excuse me, that I really, really love. And then, of course, Mad Hatter, which, again, it's another one of those instances where they make you feel bad for the villain. And, and feel, and it's, to an extent, feel compassion. this person who's just in love with this girl who with a boyfriend who's probably wrong for her. They're always fighting, and you know, he can't seem to get any headway with her, and just how his, you know, love consumes him, and it's such a sad story to see. You know, again, all of these are just wonderful episodes that I love watching. So let's move on to, you know, again, fights. I love the fights here. You know, the for that matter, the action in this series was really, really incredible. Yeah, I love the way they had Batman move. And again, you see a lot of things here that they, I think they really would use later, you know, in, you know, the Nolan movies and stuff like that. In the way that, you know, Batman was this great martial artist and really great hand-to-hand combat type of person. The fights themselves were absolutely excellent. You know, and they were always different depending on the character, which is something I loved about them. You know, every fight in this series was engaging and interesting. And then the final talking point is the series pace. And I love the series pace here. Everything flows organic. Nothing feels out of place. Nothing is boring. But maybe with the exception of the Clock King episode. I mean, that may be the one sort of off episode. But, you know, outside of that, it really is... The series pace in this, the first volume, was absolutely incredible. So, final talking point, you know, the first volume of Batman the Animated Series, I had made mention to it before, the hardest thing was to stop watching Batman the Animated Series. Well, not that hard. I don't have the second volume or the third volume. But, you know, like I said, because of that, I was listening... I was watching movies. I went to listening to podcasts of my friends while they were talking about Batman. Yeah. This is such a great series. And you become so consumed with Batman. And you get pulled so much in to who these characters are. That you don't want to give it up. And that's what makes this series so good. It especially this first volume of episodes. It really lends itself to how great this series is. And really why this is one of the best animated series of all time. So a 5 out of 5 for me. And I think this is a must-have for anybody's collection, even if you don't like anime. Or just say animation, for that matter. whether you like anime or animation, if you don't like any of those, it really is a show that even people who don't like animation could probably get into. Because it really is character-driven stories. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Remember, there are numerous ways you can contact the show. You can leave us an email at absolution132@yahoo.com. And you can also leave us a message on Facebook by liking us on Facebook, which you can do by finding us by searching Absolution Network. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the site, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're there, check out all the other 132 Productions sites, which includes, you know, Random Red Box Reviews, Flashpoint, Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, and, of course, Comic Book Crazy. You can find Tokyo SOS and Comic Book Crazy, which are my other two podcasting sites, at www.tokyosos.132productions.com and at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, while you're at any of the sites, remember to check our sidebars and check out all our friends. Like I said, Michael Bailey's huge Malone box is on there, along with his From Crisis to Crisis podcast that he does with Jeffrey Taylor. Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Schleicher's Major Spoilers podcast, and of course, Guy Gardner's Two True Freaks. You know, all of them wonderful podcasts, along with many more. You can find them in the sidebar. Check them out. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Radio. Next week, we transform and roll out as we review Beast Wars, Volume 1, Season 1. So until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
A cursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort. But I am not worried. For one day you will fail.
Listening to the Toonami Black Hole Megamix by DJ Clark Nova. Don't sleep on it.